All right, folks, thank you for joining us on another This Week in Geek recap of all the things that are important to you, the worst demographic out there.
All of them, completely comprehensive.
Woo! Yeah.
Yes, woo. I am Frank. I'm joined in studio by Pope, Al, Big Papa Pete, and our special guest, Michelle. Hi!
Hello!
All right. And yeah, we're going to be talking about geek stuff. You know how this... come on! You read the podcast description before you downloaded this. It makes sense. First up, the Oscars. Just at the time of this recording, I think just recently released. Yesterday something? Maybe this morning? I don't remember.
Yeah.
The Oscars have a bunch of movies that I assume they give awards to? How does that work? Whoa!
Money.
Oh, all right. That was more jaded than I thought you were going to go. But yes, Oscar season has once again hit.
Usually you make a movie, you have to release it in New York and LA for, I think, a week.
Oh, I didn't really expect we were going to get an answer.
You need something like X million penetration of people isn't watching the movie, unless it's in certain categories, like shorts and documentaries.
So isn't that like the legendary story behind the Disaster Artist's The Room?
Yeah.
Was that he wanted to make sure it was in theaters long enough to be nominated for an Academy Award?
Yep.
Wow. Great.
And like, it needs to be locked to LA or New York. Although now we have some interesting stuff because of Netflix releasing stuff, because they had what was nominated for an Oscar that they did? Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it needs to be locked into a certain amount of views and penetration and so on. Things like that. But now you have Netflix kind of messing up the game.
Well, that's kind of why Netflix does occasionally put a movie in a theater, just so that it could get the nom. But I don't know if that's going to be necessary for much longer, as the internet is ruining everything. Speaking of ruining everything, I want to the most geeky thing we could talk about is the Best Picture noms. So there was a legend, there was rumors that they were going to introduce a new category for the Oscars this year. Do we remember what it was called? It was like
I don't actually.
I think it was like most popular film. Or I think popular film was the subgenre.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a blanket bucket for movies that are not necessarily art house films, but are rabidly popular, like Infinity War, or the one that was floated on early was Black Panther. And there was immediate pushback on this. Have you never heard any of the...
I didn't hear any of this, but the idea of a popular film, like best popular film category, sounds very intriguing.
I think the point was they were trying to say, like, a lot of the Oscar films don't really touch upon the larger audience, so they were trying to get like something that was largely popular and made, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars.
The people in Peoria don't watch the Favorite; they watch Big Bang Boom. You know what's going to get them off their tractors? That kind of deal. But there was a Transformers movie. The Oscar for Best Transformers movie goes to
none of them.
None.
Never.
Hey, well, actually,
it just goes to The Touch. That's all. Yeah,
the animated film, 1984.
The Touch?
No? All right.
Like the song?
The song. Yeah, it just goes to the song, The Touch. That's it.
I wasn't sure if that was just like the song gets it, or if that's a fandom way of shorthand for referring to the old 80s animated.
Interestingly enough, the best musical number category, the best song from a movie, was almost retired after 1984 because of the work of Stan Bush, author and composer and saint that brought us The Touch. That is an actual fact. Look at Wikipedia right now, and there is a chance that what I just said will be there.
That's crazy.
Look it up.
Yeah. All right. There is a chance that no one will have corrected Frank's edit.
That's right. That will be there. No. So the best popular thing, the drawback on that is that you're basically saying these movies don't count. Like, these aren't real movies. These are just popular movies.
Yeah.
So that was what, in fact, the people who supported Black Panther were most upset about the idea that it was going to win this sort of lesser category, this we had to make it for. And I get it, man. I'm a geek. I had the same thing with animated films. When, what was it that was nominated for an animated film? Was it Beauty and the Beast or something? There was a Disney film.
Yeah, a while back,
It was nominated for Best Film, and then afterwards they were like, all right, well, we got to stop that. We can't let that happen anymore, so let's make up a new category for animated movies so that they have their own little thing.
Thanks, Disney.
That sucks, man. If it's a good movie, it's a feature-length movie, then give it best picture.
See, but here's the thing that I have a problem with, because that doesn't make them ineligible for best picture.
No, it doesn't. But the way these things work is it's very political, and there is the sense that sometimes you will get the booby prize, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we couldn't give you best picture, Black Panther, because you're just a comic book movie, but we'll give you best cutesy movie. We get best try, good effort reward from the Oscars. Mm-hmm. That's what the pushback was. I understand why that exists, and ultimately the Oscars decided not to do it. They did not create a new category for Best Popular Film, and perhaps even more shockingly, Black Panther, a comic book movie, got nominated for Best Picture. What do we think about that?
I'm of two minds on this.
Ooh.
As one, I'm really happy with this. I like that this film that I really, really enjoyed is nominated for Best Picture, as opposed to these films that I will never actually watch being nominated for Best Picture. Nine times out of ten, I'm like, I'm really not interested in most of the films that, like, kind of these art, not to say that art house films in general are just bad or not something I enjoy, but they're
what
not.
What don't you like about Lady Gaga that you refuse to watch A Star Is
Born? Oh, no, it's Bradley Cooper that ruins that movie.
Actually, he's a raccoon or nothing. He's a raccoon or nothing, damn it.
Anyway, but I like this. I like this a lot. But to me, I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, I liked Black Panther, but I thought Infinity War was the better film.
I've heard people saying this. That sounds terrible. How do people actually? It's not even a full movie. That's not entirely true. I would say that it is a full story, more or less.
Yes. Yeah.
But it is interesting. That, if anything, deserves Best Popular Film. That is a, like, hey, I commend you for the effort of assembling 10 years worth of movies into a story. But that doesn't mean it's a good movie to me. It is a good, I enjoyed the film.
Yeah.
But I think Black Panther was a better story overall. I think it was a more cohesive story. I think it was a more poignant story. I don't know why so many geeks who I thought would be the first ones who'd be super excited at Black Panther. Like, as a kid, I remembered, I can't believe I'm admitting this, I was angry at Schindler's List. Wait for it. Because it came out the same year as Jurassic Park, and I was like, Steven Spielberg, why'd you do that? You could have gotten Best Picture 2 years in a row if you had just waited. So my stupid-ass mind as a child thought that Jurassic Park had a chance of winning Best Picture. And I wanted Schindler's List to wait until the Jurassic Park thing was over so he could get... That's dumb. That's really dumb.
In retrospect, yes.
In every respect, it is dumb. But, like, I would think that geeks would be super excited to see a comic book movie win, and they seem like, begrudgingly so, but it's always with that asterisk of, why not Infinity War? Like, cause it's not as good a movie.
I mean, that's technically fair, because it does suffer from a lot of those problems of not, like, the full story's not told yet, we're waiting for Endgame and whatnot, and it is more comic booky than, I guess, Black Panther was. Mm. But I think that's one of the reasons why maybe it bothers me a little bit.
It also lacks the social commentary of Black Panther, which it's like it or not, that's one of those things that Oscar voters gravitate towards. You know, the people that make the decisions about the Oscars like movies that feel important. And Infinity War felt like a popcorn movie. Black Panther felt like an important popcorn movie.
Yeah, and then let's not forget, you know, them getting backlash because of the hashtag Oscar so white into Moonlight winning an Oscar thing, where they've tried to gravitate that way. I'm not saying that that's what caused it, but I'm saying they're trying to pay attention in that direction because of what's happened.
They're trying to be more aware. I think I want to put a caveat on all this, because there's a reading of this podcast so far that it's like, oh, because it's, you know, it's dealing with issues, and oh, it's, you know, got it's representation.
That's not a bad thing.
No, well, if it was just for those reasons, yeah, I want to be super excited. I like a movie that's going to... The fact that this popcorn movie, this superhero movie, could deal with these issues...
Yes.
...was one of the reasons why I loved it so much.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that it had a wider palette to paint with is one of the reasons I loved it so much. So, yes, it's not just pandering. I'm putting air quotes around that. You're pandering to people who want that because they enjoy it, because it's good quality stuff you're making.
Yeah,
and that's why we're giving you an award.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that, Frank. I definitely wouldn't view it as, like, it's pure pandering.
Also, leading back to your best animated thing, that, like, Spider-Man probably deserved more of a nod if we're going to, you know, only put one superhero movie in that category, the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that, unfortunately, that's one of the reasons why I'm excited I'm happy that the best popular film didn't get made, because now that the animated film, best animated film, is out of the... Now that the horse is out of the barn, it's gone. You know, you're not going to get an animated film for the most part. I don't think you'll ever get an animated film in Best Picture. I'll be surprised when it happens, and it'll have to be like a goddamn amazing film. I guess my long story short here is that I think it's awesome that a film that is, you know, fun sci-fi superhero-y, if we're going to call that a genre, is being nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture. I definitely think they picked the best one of the crop
this year.
That year, yeah, definitely. I do think it was one of the more interesting ones. And there's always going to be a conflict when it comes to a comedy or a sci-fi or a genre film being put up for Best Picture.
I'll be surprised. I am surprised that like Michael B. Jordan didn't get nominated for Best Supporting Actor, because I felt he did an amazing job in that movie.
It is a little surprising how many awards Black Panther did not go up for.
Yeah, it got shut out of the serious categories other than Best Picture. I mean, nothing for screenplay.
Nothing for effects.
No director.
No director, none of the actors.
Yeah.
They nominate 9 movies for the Best Picture category. I don't think that's serious at all anymore.
Yeah, or that there's too many. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, they had to like increase it multiple times in the past like 15 years.
It's interesting. This is why I'm saying that it is a little political in terms of political by like, we're going to give you an award. We want to give you something. So I think if you create more categories, it just gives people more opportunities to say, well, you got this. So we don't have to worry about, being weird or offensive or neglecting something that the zeitgeist is into. So if you created like best superhero movie as a category, then you wouldn't see them up for anything else.
Can I share my unpopular geek opinion
this?
I was happy to see Black Panther nominated, but I wasn't that impressed.
With Black Panther or the fact that it was nominated?
With the fact that it was nominated. It doesn't strike me as a big deal. I mean, maybe it's the first true superhero movie that was made, but we're more than 10 years out, 15 years out from Return of the King winning Best Picture.
Sure.
Winning Best Picture, not just being nominated.
Yeah, the whole clean sweep year where they got everything they were nominated for.
I mean, nerds, we're on the stage.
You're absolutely right. We are definitely on the stage.
Yeah, I'm a little upset that it's taken this long for a genre film, like a really popular genre film, to make it back.
Yeah. None of the Dark Knights that Batman Begins, none of those hit? Wow. Uh-uh. That's how out of touch I am.
That was shocking to me.
Yeah. To be honest, I think the caveat with things like Lord of the Rings is that it's literature. It's a novel. It's hard to read. You know, there's always been a comics or funny books.
I don't know. A lot of those Black Panther books are pretty hard to read.
Whoa.
Books from the 90s. Early 2000s.
Couldn't think of a single funny thing to add to that. No tags.
Nope.
All right. So, yes, clearly the winner is going to be Roma. I don't know anything about that movie. The only other movie...
I'm assuming it's about Popular Tomatoes.
Probably. Black Klansman is...
try to pronounce the 3 Ks?
I probably did. It's a hell of a story. Bohemian Rhapsody made all the money, but critics were only so-so on it. Star is Born is also one of those movies that made all the money, but how many times are you going to redo that movie? Apparently 3 times. And Vice, I've heard good things as well, but the only movie on this list that a certain somebody is drooling about is The Favorite. And that's your favorite, right, Pope?
I think it's my favorite to win the category because, like, truthfully speaking, it's very inviting for people outside of the genre because it's kind of raunchy, actually.
So tell us, I don't really know much about it other than it seems incredibly boring.
There's this tragic queen, I forget if it's all of England or like a smaller area within. She had and lost 17 children.
Oh, wow.
Good God.
And yeah, she was like a solo queen by herself at that point.
That's kind of, all right, now this is actually kind of hilarious if by lost children, she was like a school teacher.
No, they're all dead.
Imagine that. Like, no. But before we go into how they're dead, or even if they are dead. Just picture this, like, I keep losing these kids. This daycare is not going to stay open. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Green light this. Yeah. It's good.
So 17 kids, Melissa McCarthy. Either dead in birth or lived a little and died. And Rachel Weisz's character is kind of her right-hand man, woman. Phantom running the country, practically.
Her major domo.
Yeah, pretty much. And then also is kind of her side piece, because she does sexual favors for the queen.
Oh, there's sexy times in this movie.
So then you get the Emma Stone character come in, who is her distant cousin, who was kind of lost her nobility a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, I just need a job. Please help me. So she kind of does some stuff and like finagles her way getting closer to the queen. And then because Rachel Weisz's character is so busy running the country, Emma Stone's character has a chance to slip in figuratively and literally. So, in fact, the best lines in the movie, actually, which, like, quoting, like, Rachel Weisz is like, you will send her away. And the queen's like, no, I like it when she... I don't know if I could say that.
Okay, yeah, that's good enough. Let's leave it at that.
So, Shakespearean-level raunchiness.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Period piece. Cool.
But, honestly, it was hysterical, too. It took cinematography to another level. It did, like... very non-standard things with filmmaking. Like, there's a lot of use of wide shots, a lot of use of natural light, warping, like, wide-angle lenses, if not straight-up fisheye, in a lot of aspects, and very, very seldom did a longer lens for, like, a close-up kind of shot.
I feel like you're describing a lot of really bad film school movies.
Yeah.
But you're saying that this works well.
But they used it well. Like, okay, cool. It was actually awesome for storytelling, the way they used it, the way they did it. A lot of, like, one-take things that actually worked really well, and, you know, we're very well put together, you know, good choreography to a scene, so they were able to get everything worked out without cutting away. So there's a lot of very fun stuff for it, and I can see why they nominated it for 10 Oscars.
Wow, 10. That's crazy.
I think so, yeah.
All right, so how many superheroes appear in this movie?
7.
Wow. Now I'm all in. I'm all in.
The Magnificent 7.
All right. For me, my favorite category is always, well, it's mixed. I do like the short films. But I do enjoy the animated picture. I got a nice warm spot in my heart for that. And we have a couple in here that are good. I do want to talk about the Isle of Dogs, I believe, is this year.
Okay.
I believe...
Fantastic Mr. Fox 2.
Electric Boogaloo. Incredibles 2 is actually on this year.
A sequel.
Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Also a sequel.
Yeah. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And Mirai, which is the only movie on the list that I have not seen. To be honest, it's hard for me to pick. For me, the go-to is... Isle of Dogs is amazing. I love Wes Anderson and his work in the animated field. He does great things. The movie is very Wes Anderson. And I could tell that at one point you're like...
Which means people are going to... The Academy is just going to be throwing Oscars at it.
Very likely for that to happen. So if there's one film where and The Incredibles, I mean, iconic. One of my favorite, if not my favorite Pixar film. Incredibles 2, though, good. Very, very good. But I don't know. Just, it didn't seem to... It's a sequel, so it doesn't seem to tread the new ground that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And almost the same argument with Isle of Dogs, because it's so Wes Anderson. But then you got Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which just blew my mind away with Rebel, with how new it all was, even though it was dealing with a very, like, old character. Like, it was literally dealing with a character who may be the one character that we are all the most familiar with in terms of the superhero resurgence. The character that has been around the longest during the golden age of superhero movies, right? A little bit longer than X-Men, I think. The character... the year after,
like,
or something like that.
4 or 5, I think. But,
yeah. The character who has been rebooted the most amount of times and still actively in movies. A major powerhouse, but doing something completely new with it. That's iconic for me for an Oscar nom. So yeah, I mean, I'm good. I'm glad that the Oscars are finally talking about movies I give a crap about.
Yay!
I haven't watched it since Return of the King, as Pete said. It's the last time I cared about
him. Last time I cared was as a little dumbass kid who was like, "Well, you're a dinosaur movie and World War II story." A very weird voice as a child.
Yeah, that's fair.
84 years.
Frank, you and I were both out of college when we were Return of the King was released.
No, I'm talking about Jurassic Park.
Oh, well. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I even paid attention. I honestly do think that left a bad taste in my mouth. And then it was years later that I was like, that is really inappropriate and stupid.
Frank, I'm younger. You want to know something? Yeah. I mean, and just to attest to your stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm younger than you mm-hmm. by a couple of years. And I remember thinking, oh boy, Schindler's List really deserves this.
Oh, there's not a world where my theory on the way... Like, Steven Spielberg, if he found out I felt that way, he'd be like, what the hell is wrong with you? And
you're not wrong.
He'd be right.
He's right. That's a good question.
Staying on the topic of movies, though.
Yes.
So there is a teaser trailer for something that I kind of think we all want to talk about a little bit.
Okay.
The new Ghostbusters film.
That's right. Ghostbusters.
It was just the noise and then like the back end of the car and we got the Ghostbusters symbol. And, I would not have called that they would have said, we're doing a sequel. We're doing Ghostbusters 3 now.
Yeah.
Like, after rebooting it, have we done this before? Have we done like, hey, we rebooted it and then we're going back to the source material? Has that ever happened?
I don't know.
Not outside of comics.
Yeah, I don't know. That's actually a really good question. Could you think of any movie that got, quote, rebooted?
James Bond.
James Bond?
Because they brought back Connery.
Did they? Did they
No, because
that's the closest they've come.
Yeah.
That doesn't count as a reboot, though, because he was still following the story that Connery was telling. They just had a different actor, and then they got Connery back for the next movie.
Yeah, no, I think that's iffy. Interesting.
James Bond continuity is not something you want to dabble in.
You can say Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse if you believe the theory that Peter B. Parker is Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, which is possible.
Yeah.
But even that's kind of that's weak. I don't know if I've ever thought of this, and we're not really sure. I guess this is officially a sequel. That's what Reitman? I want to say Sam Reitman.
Jason Reitman.
Yep.
Jason Reitman is...
Ivan's son.
Yeah.
And I saw like a picture of Bill Murray promotional like in the suit today.
Oh, really? Yeah. So I don't know if they're really doing this.
I don't know. I don't even know if it was real, but I did see Bill Murray looking defeated in the suit today.
All right. In that case, it's probably from Zombieland.
I was going to say, I'm betting somebody's photoshopped something from Lost in Translation.
Yeah. So the basic stories for those of you who have not got the news yet is that that the son of Ivan Reitman has gotten the permission to make his Ghostbusters movie. He has said that it's going to be a sequel. It's going to continue on where the original Ghostbusters from the 80s took place. And that's all we really know so far. We don't really know who's returning or if anybody, but it is set in the same continuity. This is important in a way, as important as any of this stuff could be, because recently, about 2 or 3 years ago, they rebooted the Ghostbusters movie.
Ghostbusters Answer the Call, the official title.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, they did. They put a subtitle to it for official purposes, although nobody used it.
Really. That's fair.
All right, and it's also known as the all-female Ghostbusters reboot.
Which will be apparently entirely shut out from this.
As far as we know. So, yeah, this was, I think, at the cusp of the beginning. The 2016 is like the beginning of this new era of geek toxicity and and people just being awful on the internet. So around this time, we got people pushing back against The Last Jedi and a lot of the actors involved in that. The actors involved in the Ghostbusters reboot, you got a lot of flack about this, right? It was relatively controversial that this...
And we didn't think it could get any worse. And, wow, we were wrong on that.
Oh, yeah. It keeps, like, every day the internet will show you something worse about itself. But what was interesting about this earliest stage of the Ghostbusters flack is that there was a small group of people, and this is like, you know, this is right around Gamergate, a little after Gamergate, right before Comicsgate. There was a small group of people that maintained that their reason for disliking the Ghostbusters movie was that they didn't want to see something that's a classic get remade. That they were, in fact, opposed to remake culture, not opposed to a female-backed project with characters. It was interesting because that was how the fight. Do you remember this? Like, it's basically the argument you know, people arguing that the people who were against the Ghostbusters remake were haters and misogynists, and then some who were clearly haters and misogynists, and then another group of people saying, no, I just don't want another Ghostbusters movie. What I was very curious when this came up is that what were people's reactions to this going to be? And I fully expected some sort of level of like nostalgia coming in where people are like, oh, it was awesome. And immediately, I was very pleasantly surprised that the intense amount of hatred and pushback I saw was about the same as for the 2016 Ghostbusters. And I'm like, you know what? For 2019, this is growth. Good for you, Internet. You hate with the same amount of strength, even though it is ostensibly the original cast potentially, or at least the original storyline. It is a reboot from the people who originally made it. But no, we're going to honor the 80s Ghostbusters. People are like, why are you doing this? There's no need for this movie. And it wasn't like people just traded the baton. I don't think it was just Ghostbusters 2016 fans. These are people who describe themselves as original Ghostbusters fans. Yeah. They're like, we don't want to see this movie.
Like, and anecdotally speaking, the same people that were complaining about doing reboots for the 2016 movie are still complaining about doing reboots.
Yes. And I honestly was like, this is a win.
Let sleeping films as lie.
2019 win.
As long as we hate everything equally, right?
Yeah, equal opportunity dislike of things. I'm not saying that that's still good or healthy.
It's not.
If you disagree with something, at least apply that disagreement universally.
Yeah, at least there's that.
It's weird.
You keep your standards up.
So, Al, you're saying it's not. Why?
I just don't think that it's fair to judge any piece without having seen it. Like, I just feel like that's...
I've seen you do that a lot.
Yeah, but he's not fair about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm a hypocrite, so what does that mean? Let's be honest here.
I'm a hypocrite, but I'm an honest hypocrite.
Exactly. I'll swear by my hypocrisy. But no, I mean, in all honesty, I don't think it's that necessarily fair to judge it solely upon. Like, listen, you can say to a certain extent, oh, that might not be for me. Because that's fine. If there's a movie that I haven't seen that seems to be about a subject matter or something that I have no interest in, like, hey, would you like to learn the history of Q-tips and like where they come from? Like, not really. I think I can pass on that. It might be good, it might be bad, but
right.
I know it's not for me.
Yeah. I agree.
But
with
what
that.
About this remake of my Q-tip documentary? With an all Cuban cast.
There you go. But actually, I'd be vaguely interested.
Yeah, why? I'd like to hear more about this pitch. Yeah. Go on.
Let me develop it a little bit.
But I think there's something about like saying, oh, well, it's just bad, as opposed to, that's not for me. There's a difference there between like, this shouldn't happen. I don't want this to exist. I will never subscribe to the concept that less is more or that you gain something through subtraction.
On the surface, I 100% agree with you. I do think like... And that was kind of my feelings about Ghostbusters 2016.
Yeah.
I was more like, at the time, there were so many movies I hadn't seen, hadn't had a chance to see, that were coming out, like genre films that somebody, a geek like me, would just, like I've said it before, I've yet to see Justice League. That's weird. 10-year-old me, who, after arguing that Schindler's List should have been made, would also be like, oh, of course I would see that movie opening day. And I just never had a chance to do it. And the Ghostbusters 2016, I was like, I'd be interested, and I never had a chance. It wasn't like, I wasn't hate. It was more like, not my cup of tea. I don't know if I have the time for this right now. And I think that is probably, for your own mental health, better for you.
Yeah.
But I think there are situations where you, being a little upset is warranted. I think there's, for example, if someone said that they're going to reboot Black Panther with an all or a majority white cast, right? Now, that's a really bad analogy. I'm not suggesting that, like, Ghostbusters is Ghostbusters because they're male and that's counterproductive. There was a time when you were like, you know, you're producing content to get content. And if you're not honoring something that's going before, like, why are you doing it? Like, you're like, for me, if whenever I got close to being offended by Ghostbusters 2016, it was these actresses... could have been in a really cool movie where they were fighting ghosts, and it was somewhat funny and horrifying, and you could do something completely new with it and give yourself credits instead of just milking this reboot train.
I feel like we did that, and it was Evolution. And
I don't know if that was funny, but
that's
okay.
No, I guess like it wasn't. I think that was the problem.
Yeah, but you love that movie.
I don't know how. It's hard for me to describe how this is. Imagine if no, and I think I've actually talked about this on other things like Star Wars and whatever. Like, imagine if there was no more George Lucases. You couldn't get another George Lucas because instead of making a new kind of Star Wars or what have you,
right.
Like he tried to make a new kind of Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon. He was like, no, you have to reboot Flash Gordon. We have this license for Flash Gordon. You have to make Flash Gordon. It's 1974. Make this Flash Gordon movie. And then all we'd be talking right now is, you know, this movie that Mark Hamill was Flash Gordon for in the 70s. Like, it feels lesser.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't get to the point where I'm angry about it, screaming on the internet, but I could understand why somebody would be like, this is a missed opportunity. I don't think that's the majority of the people who were angrily screaming about this movie were.
Yeah.
But I can imagine. Like, for me, as a fan of comedy, as a fan of these actresses, I wanted to see them do something where they could just be like, this is our own thing. Because maybe Ghostbusters isn't the best thing ever that we have to idolize it for 40 more years. Maybe what they were going to make was going to be the best thing ever. But since it's just a reboot, it's like the best picture thing. It's like a lesser category you've just made it just by strength of making it a reboot. I don't know. That may be...
I mean, again, nuts. I would agree with you if I felt like that was often what their argument was, but I think you're right. I think that more often than not, they're saying, like, they're not judging it or saying, oh, missed opportunity. They're saying, well, this movie's going to suck, or, like, this movie's going to be terrible because it's Ghostbusters. And whether or not we're talking about the 2016 movie or the reboot now, like, I mean, we don't even know what the...
It's the nostalgia goggles. You can't ever be better than
Mike. But even this thing, the third movie, we don't even know what that's about. Maybe it will tie so intrinsically into those first films that... The idea of them making just a different like movie, like no, they need this was Ghostbusters,
yeah.
Like unlike the 2016 film, which could have arguably been on its own since it mm-hmm. didn't take much from the previous films, it could have been its own film, and maybe should have been to a certain extent. I don't know. I'm not a Hollywood bigwig. I don't know how math works in those big numbers.
I don't understand math. I'm just a hypocrite. That's
I'm just your normal Jersey hypocrite. And but yeah, I understand that, but I feel like there's a difference between like, oh, well, you know, what we could have had compared to we just shouldn't have this.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm burnt out a little on stuff like this, though, too. Like, I feel like we've talked about it, like superheroes and stuff like that, where it's like, that movie just didn't do anything for me. Like, I wasn't excited nor angry about it. I just didn't want to see it. And there's a nostalgia effect I got from watching the teaser there. But honestly, like, I'm still just kind of like, all right, cool. I guess I'll wait and see on this because that's where I'm at right now.
I can actually really relate to that because I think the only time I go in and I start watching and loving genre films is like when I don't have expectations about them. Like a lot of the ones I sit there and I'm like, oh man, is this going to be, I want this to be good. I want this to be good. So bad. Okay. Thank God it was good. And I just feel relief. I don't feel the excitement that normally comes with really enjoying
it. Please don't make a bad movie. Please don't make
exactly.
You're ruining the culture.
Instead, yeah. Like one of my favorite theater experiences of this year was going to go see Venom. Because I expected nothing out of that film and just went in there and like, oh, this was great. And like, I was talking about it for 2 days afterwards. Even though it wasn't as good as some of these other films that I went to go see by a country mile, I still really enjoyed that theater experience.
I expected nothing out of Venom and feel as though I received it in abundance.
Yep.
Yeah, quote Dr. Frankenfurter.
How many people see? Did you see Venom? In theaters? Did you see it
in theaters. I saw it on a plane the other day.
Oh, good. That seems like a movie you would see in a plane. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, it does seem like it's just fun. And there's a certain amount of just relax and play along. And honestly, I'm hoping one of you can remind me of this or else this is going to be an awkward part of the podcast. But like, there was a movie that got remade recently that like, or is it like a late stage sequel? Then I'm like, well, why do they do this? But like you said, Al, it was so well tied in to the original franchise that I was like, oh, wow.
Incredibles 2? I mean, that has been a long
Godzilla,
time.
Godzilla, King Kong.
I can't.
Toy Story 3?
Yes. Toy Story 3, Electric Boogaloo. No, I can't remember what it was, but there was a film where I was like, okay, I understand why this connects into the greater universe.
Blade Runner?
Maybe.
Because that was a while before they made that sequel.
Creed?
Creed tracks. Definitely Creed is a wonderful example of that, where it's telling
the one you were thinking of, but yeah, it works.
It is telling an original story, but instead of just I wouldn't even necessarily call that a reboot, though.
No, it is a sequel. It's just a sequel.
Yeah,
that's what Ghostbusters.
Yeah, yeah. I think
this new Ghostbusters is at least claiming that it's going to be.
Yeah, but it's not named like the new company, like that isn't Ghostbusters, like Creed is. Creed is its own franchise that has spun off of Rocky, that has an ancillary character that had its own franchise.
But I think Pete's right. It is what I'm in the spirit of what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Theoretically, this new Ghostbusters movie could be the children of Walter Pike becoming Ghostbusters.
Oh, God.
And then the old Ghostbusters having to train their once rival's child.
It couldn't be.
Why?
Because that man has no.
All right.
He could still have a child.
Can I just say that I am actually excited for this new Ghostbusters. And I see it as an opportunity. I'm really rooting for it to succeed. Because this is one of the first times I can remember that we've got real fanboys, apparently, at the helm. Like people who are actual fans of the old movie.
Yeah, there is a...
And with the express intent of, we want to go in and take this world that we loved so much and tell more stories in it. And that is something I have always wanted to do. I've wanted to believe that it's possible to do that and do it well. And to create a movie that's just as iconic as the ones that you grew up with, playing with the same toys. And, I mean, Jason Reitman has described himself as the original Ghostbusters fan.
Right.
Because he was, as a kid, running around on the set.
That's cool.
Falling in love with these characters before anybody else got a chance to see them.
And we don't normally do this on this network where we, focus on the haters and I think we may have done a disservice by spending the top part of this conversation talking about the people who hated it. But yeah, there are valid reasons to be excited about this. One of the, like Pete just described, that this is something you are interested in seeing made, a loving remake.
I want to believe this is possible.
And also, I think just so that we're fair and balanced here, in a real way, there's a good reason to wanting to see reboots too. It's not just culture grabs and money grabs and what have you. There's something to be said about access. You can't get like in vintage comic book characters. You can't go back in time and create a 1940s character that's been around with an ancient history. Sometimes you want to make Captain America or Thor a woman just to give them a chance to do something in the comic world where we're so reliant on our histories, on our legacy characters. Mm-hmm. You can't build legacy. You can't recreate it unless you're talking about like
Watchmen.
Yeah, or what's his name? Sentry.
The Sentry.
Yeah, well, you could do that. But like, I can understand their idea of like, no, rebooting things is sort of a way of giving deeper roots for things that are new. If you wanted to reboot Nancy Drew and have it an African American girl being Nancy Drew, you'd get a lot of hate on the internet, of course, because it's the internet. But more importantly, you get a chance to have like a character that's been around forever reimagined slightly. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Annie, I thought, was a great idea. It works. I think it was cool that they tried to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
But I could,
on the small screen, Riverdale and Sabrina,
yes,
are good examples that I think worked really well. Although, absolutely, I think a lot of the fans of the original material absolutely hate it.
Oh yeah,
people hate Riverdale. Yeah. Riverdale is on the Pretty People TV channel.
Well, yeah,
and like you can't argue; they're all gorgeous.
Oh yeah,
so attractive.
It's horrible, but I admit they're horribly attractive. I like it.
I don't think it's terrible. I'm not up to date on it. I've watched it.
No, me neither.
I think it's so not over the top that like it becomes really entertaining.
Yeah. Exactly. It's that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And I loved Sabrina.
Oh, Sabrina was great.
Yeah. I'm completely different from the Teenage Witch on TGIF.
There,
but
there gets a point with all these CW-esque shows, because not all of them are CW, but they're close. Like Sabrina is...
Yeah. Sabrina would fit.
Yes. Where it's like you are watching a soap opera with dressing, with like genre dressing, and I'm all in for that.
Very much Riverdale.
Anybody remember Passions? Like back when I was in high school?
That was really nobody. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Never
mind. I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it, but I did not watch any of it. There was like...
That was a soap opera with nothing but like fantasy dressing at all. Yeah, it's called
Dark Shadows for Posers.
Yes. Newbie Dark Shadows. That would be what a Generation Xer would call that, because all of this is really old. But Riverdale is... So when watching Sabrina, as we were watching the show, I got increasingly more upset at how teenager... they are and at one point I was like, wait, it's in the title. Why am I this
upset?
You
can only get so angry when you, like, they let you know what you're getting in there
this
for.
This is my fault for going into this edit, but it was great. I do think that there is a wide range of different ways of playing with genre. And I think the Netflix shows and the CW shows and all the glut of new superhero TV is cool, but one of the side effects of it is that if you have an incomplete story, it's easier to wrap up a story in a comic book than it is in a TV show.
Yep.
Or a comic book or a movie than it is a TV show, in fact.
Are we transitioning to a new topic, Frank?
We are. So Netflix and the Marvel shows, Punisher just got released, Punisher Season 2.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It is well-received.
Punisher Season 2, Jigsaw Boogaloo.
Yeah, there is a lot of, again, interesting arguments on the internet about them, about it, because Punisher has, for no logical reason, become, in the last few years and decades, an icon for police, and also the alt-right, for some reason.
It's very strange, but
police is the weird one for me.
As a person who works at a lot of comic conventions, a lot of toy conventions and such, these are the types of people who wear the Punisher shirts and like oh man, let's check out my like cool like Mezco 1/12 scale Punisher action figure.
Oh, really?
Like, and it's just like, these are the these are not always the fans, but these are the guys that are the most cool about it, because like takes into his own hands, man, it's great. And like, or
I have on numerous occasions at a comic convention been approached by somebody like, you know why people like the Punisher? Because he is actually okay, he's willing to clean up the streets, he takes it into his own hands. And I'm like, that's really disturbing. Very disturbing when it comes from like a law enforcement individual. Like, the Punisher kills cops. He has, and crooked ones certainly, but he does make life for police in his fictional universe really bad. Yet somehow he has been an icon.
To say nothing of the fact that he's murdering people, which is against the law.
Very odd. And
in most cases.
The focus on this recent season is also on a lot of the people who may, in the real world, most like the Punisher. It's very interesting. It's a little new to be reviewing on this show, but it does bring up the sore point of all the Marvel Netflix shows that are leaving. And have been canceled recently. Punisher has not yet been canceled as of the time of this recording.
Yep.
But it's probably coming.
Yeah,
it's
we're most likely
coming.
One question I have, though, is like, you know, nobody's mentioned anything about Defenders. Was it like literally only listed as a limited event, and that's why they haven't, you know, canceled
Defenders,
it?
There was never a second season announced.
Yeah, there was never a plan for that, but like, I mean...
Oh, why wasn't it canceled, you mean?
Yeah, I wonder like whether...
Why doesn't it get classified as canceled?
Yeah.
I think it might have been a limited series. That might have been why.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the story about that is. But now I'm already beginning to feel the pangs of the storylines that have ended before their time.
Yeah.
In terms of these Marvel series. For me, Iron Fist really like improved widely in the second season. And it does end in the way where you want to know what happens next. Daredevil, I feel like it does have somewhat of a conclusion, but it is disappointing to see. One of the selling points of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that it's a cinematic universe, that these worlds connect.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly seeing how them disconnect. I mean, forget Infinity War. This is the first deaths in the Marvel MCU, right? These are the characters you're not going to see again.
And I'll be honest.
Well, Quicksilver.
jeez. But I'll be honest, like Luke Cage also ended on another similar note where I was like, man, Luke I really Cage. Wanted to know more.
And definitely.
Like, yeah.
That ends in a very odd way that does not stand
did,
on its own.
Did Luke only get one season or two?
Two seasons.
Two. Okay.
Yeah, one thing I noticed recently, which I've probably been thinking too hard about, is that Deborah Ann Wall said she was done playing Karen Page after whatever she was in the filming right now. Like, she wasn't going to re-sign for anything.
Yeah, I think that was after all the cancellations, so I do believe it comes with, like, well, we're not coming back, so Punisher will be my last act as Karen Page. And it's odd. Clearly, this is a reaction to the Disney streaming service that's coming soon. I think that's all but official on why
it's been announced. No. As for the reasoning,
yeah,
I don't think anybody's said that's officially it, but.
But even then,
that writing's on the wall.
Yeah, it's a little confusing why you would want to have different products on different streaming services at the same time.
It's unclear who's the one that is really behind pulling the trigger.
I'm going to go ahead and say I do believe it's Netflix. I don't think it's Disney on this one. I feel like it comes down to, at a certain point, it's like we're advertising for another streaming service if we keep these shows here.
I suppose so, but it feels like we don't know enough of the details of the agreement, so it's entirely possible that it seems unlikely that Netflix would not have some sort of approval of what the stories would be and how they would connect to the Marvel shows.
I imagine they would,
shows.
But again, we have this weird thing where it's like they're going to have these properties for those 2 years after cancellation. So that's 2 years from to try and keep this stuff out of Disney's pocket.
Yeah,
and like it's a strategy at the end of the day to just try and like, well, we've got to fight this, and if these are the dirty tricks we got, then to
make more content, because the longer they are producing content, the longer that 2 year window stays.
Well, they have the Scarlet Witch and the Loki shows that are supposed to be
those are going to be on Marvel.
Those are Marvel. Yeah, those are Disney's streaming service.
I'm saying like that's something. If you're saying like for Disney to create,
it's an incentive. Yeah. For Netflix to create more to not cancel them so that they could keep the rights longer.
Oh, no, right. I would disagree because, again, we're going back to the idea of, well, we're making content just
for our competitors.
For our competitors.
Well, a large part of what they sold themselves on a couple of years ago was Daredevil. Like, that was the thing. Like, that was part of the reason everybody got Netflix at that point, because that was the show.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it sucks. It does. I mean, because, like, you don't want to put down your prize horse, but like it's like if
I do want to put it out there again though. Think of the logic behind that. You're making Daredevil. You get to say what Daredevil is. Daredevil doesn't ever have to mention anything on the Disney streaming stuff.
Yeah,
he doesn't have to talk about any of the heroes that show up on that those series. So I don't know if it's an advertisement thing. This may actually come down to Marvel, and what we've heard is that it's Marvel television fighting with Marvel film. Arguing amongst themselves, which makes it even more frustrating.
Yeah.
Means that Marvel did this to themselves, which you kind of see it in the comic books where they don't really have much following of the movies. As a fan, I'm disappointed is what I have to say. I put a lot of effort into watching this stuff. I got good entertainment out for most of it. But in some cases, I'm left with wanting more. But it does bring up a real sensitive topic that we're probably going to have to deal with in Endgame very soon, is the movies are not the same as comic books. You're eventually, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is going to be too old to play Iron Man, theoretically. And how do you negotiate the exit strategy?
I'm sorry. I keep going back to this. If you go back to the podcast archives, you will hear me saying this over and over again. I don't understand why you can't just recast.
I think you can. I think that might be like, one of the solutions.
I think people will accept it. I think it's going to be exactly the same as when you recast James Bond.
They've done it twice already, though.
Huh?
Two big recastings already.
Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
And
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo would be the one I count as a big one. Don Cheadle, all respect to War Machine. He was a
Incredible Hulk almost doesn't even count in the Marvel universe, in the Marvel cinematic universe to me.
Yeah,
it's so separate.
It does seem so different, but I know it does happen. But we have yet to see it happen, except for Spider-Man, where the lead character in a film gets replaced, and then that franchise continues.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Ruffalo isn't heading up any more Incredible Hulk movies.
The analogy I always use goes back to comic books. When you change the artist on a comic book, you know, the character, Peter Parker as drawn by John Romita, does not look really anything like Peter Parker as drawn by Mark Bagley. Does not look like Peter Parker as drawn by Eric Larson as Todd McFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all very different looking characters, except for the basic description, you know, skinny brown hair. I think as long as you do it like that and treat it the same way, people will get it and keep following. And I don't see why there's any reason why you can't do that in the movies.
I think the problem winds up being is that, at least with, I'm using Iron Man as an example, but some of the other characters this kind of works for, is because these actors aren't just what the character looks like. They're adding themselves into these roles.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's a transition that happens with writing and artistry and all these other things. There's a lot of things that are like, but Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. And so much so that he changed who Iron Man was in the comic books. I'm not saying like that a transition can't happen or that it shouldn't. It should.
It is difficult.
Yeah. But I'm going to say is like, at some point they have to come to the realization that whoever takes up that mantle of Iron Man either has to A, not be the central focus of the next universe because they can't be Robert Downey Jr. They're just not going to be. Or B, they're like, you know, they're like, well, we have to find the next Robert Downey Jr., which is a terrible idea. You're not going to, don't search for lightning, guys. Like, just, you know.
I got to say, ask Roger Moore how that worked out. Ask Pierce Brosnan.
Not as well as it did for Connery.
Yeah. Well, no. that's part of it.
Bond was still successful.
No, again, I'm not saying like, but there's a difference between like going and search. And they didn't necessarily look for the next Connery. I think that was the thing that made it work. But again, like they have to not make, if we want Marvel, if Marvel wants Marvel movies to continue on the same track as they've been going on, I feel like they have to find out or at least try and build up certain other characters or find other things or go back to those single movie things and find out who really hits it, like Tom Hiddleston as Loki and other things. And then cool, all right, now this is how the next section of movies are going to be built around these characters.
I would agree with that if for no other reason than like this is not, they're playing with huge amounts of money here. So they can't really take a chance on, I mean, think about theoretically, if you believe any of this stuff coming out of Star Wars after Han Solo and the major rethinks of everything after a movie that didn't do so well, right? Then what are they going to do if they're like, all right, we put out Iron Man 5 with the new guy. It didn't work. We just didn't make the billions we thought we were going to make.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, you're taking a huge risk and a lot of money. So doing something where it's like, all right, the new guy is the new Iron Man, but now he is like the Hulk is, where he sort of shows up in the background of some of the movies, but isn't actually going to lead a new Iron Man franchise right away.
I completely disagree with that statement just because of how Marvel has worked so far. Marvel has succeeded by taking the risks. You know, nobody thought an Iron Man movie was going to work. But admittedly, they picked the perfect actor for it. I mean, he was Tony Stark.
To be fair, he was also a recovering criminal, so that was another dice roll.
He was also a recovering alcoholic. Yeah. Or like maybe Tony not Stark. Recovering, Tony Stark. He was Tony Stark.
That was actually part of the reason I brought up the Don Cheadle thing, though, because at that point, Terrence Howard, for four movies, was the highest paid Marvel actor. Until, I think, the third... He got paid, like, $15 million, which nobody got until, like after Thor happened.
That's exactly it. Nobody thought Guardians of the Galaxy would work. Guardians of the Galaxy shouldn't have worked. But they took the chance.
Like a bumblebee, this shouldn't be able to fly.
And they went all in. And I think that's what you have... If you want a new Tony Stark to work, a new actor playing Tony Stark, I don't think you can hide him. I think if you put him in the back and, you know, he's a supporting character, people aren't going... He's the fake Tony Stark. People aren't going to accept him. If you force him into the spotlight and let him shine and show his uniqueness, then that's when it will work.
I think that's a good argument. I mean, I also think, but I think there is risk to be taken in on other heroes or making other people the focus of your franchise.
I don't deny that. I think that's a good thing too.
Yeah. My goal was never actually to pitch these ideas to Marvel, which refuses to listen to this podcast or respond to my messages. But just to say that this is coming eventually, one way or another, we're going to have to make this decision. I think Endgame will be the beginning, possibly, of that. That or the next step in that conversation of, well, what will the audience get away with? Because I do feel like this this period of epic comic book movies isn't going to last forever. So
wrong, Frank. Comic book movies are around forever, all the time, and all movies will be eventually based on comic books.
No, they will be about hit award video games. Kingdom Hearts 3, The Trace. It's what we call that in the business.
The 11th game in the series.
All right, let's do
Wait
it.
Wait a minute.
Let's list off all the Kingdom Hearts that we can remember.
In 2002, the first game came out, Kingdom Hearts 1.
Right.
Then you had Chain of Memories, which was this like precursor game that kind of is a lead up for Kingdom Hearts 2.
No, wait, wrong? Is that wrong?
No, it's right. No, I just don't like it.
All right.
Not a lot of people like it.
It's a card-based RPG. It's very weird.
Clicks and whistles.
Terrible.
Yes.
So you have Kingdom Hearts 2. Then, if we're talking about chronologically coming out, you have, what was it? No. Sorry, I wrote everything in like chronological order for the game series, which is even more complicated. So here we go, 358 by 2 days. It's a weird thing, but if you think about it, like it takes place over the course of a year. Uh-huh. So there's this during the same period in between Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, where the game Chain of Memory take place, there is a year long period, which 358 days is 7 days less than a year. So this is like the period in which one of the characters kind of goes through his growth, and then there's the week at the beginning of Kingdom Hearts 2. Literally leads right into the beginning of Kingdom Hearts 3.
So this is some sort of card game series, like playing Hearts?
No, it's an action RPG.
Oh. Give us some actual background on what this game is like.
Okay.
Let our guest talk.
Oh, it's hard to explain. There's a lot to it depending on what game you're actually looking at.
There are 11 games.
So, yeah.
But, like, there's a setting, right?
There's,
All right. So what's the setting?
Different worlds.
So this
hearts.
Kid is like...
Wait.
He's on kind of a deserted island,
before
and he wants
you
to escape.
Too deep into that?
Yeah.
Let me just... Can I give Frank the answer he wants?
Sure.
It's Disney meets Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all right. So how are you so bad at elevator pitches? That's it. All right. You get some of my monies before I get into the elevator to my big executive job.
You know, I figured anybody coming into this would probably know at least what the series is.
I was thinking you were talking about the card game Hearts for like the last 25 minutes. All right. So this is the one where you're playing weird Disney characters in ridiculous armor.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Final Fantasy character clad in Disney clothes hitting people with a key.
God.
And that's how he gets through the game.
So tedious.
Heartless, which are these disembodied hearts, which are the bad guys, or the nobodies, which is the disenhearted body, which fights against them, or these weird unversed things, which is
Wouldn't the hearts be no bodies and the bodies be
no
hearts?
Don't argue.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
It's about the power of friendship.
All right.
And let's just be real. Sure. It's all what it is. It's like, and I'm okay with that. I love that about it. Mm-hmm. Like, but it's just about like, hey, there's a bunch of evil people that believe that the power of people's hearts is evil, and there's Mickey and the rest of the Disney characters that think, well, people's hearts are good. So, you know, that means mean that like the power of hearts is good power.
It sounds like it's more taking like a lot of the beats from Care Bears and Rainbow Bright.
Yeah, you know what? You're not wrong.
So it's a Captain Planet thing.
Yeah.
Got it.
And it kind of like sneaks in during Disney movies. So you get to be in like Beauty and the Beast or Tron or Little Mermaid.
Oh, I thought you meant in Disney movies they would occasionally break out into video games, which I would like. Does it show up in Tron or the sequel, Tron 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Tron makes sense.
But yeah, but like in Tron, is somebody playing Kingdom Hearts in the background?
I'm just trying to imagine the crazy RPG style battles in like The Fox and the Hound.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That'd be awesome.
Well, you do
they never bring that movie in.
Why?
So unfortunately.
But you do visit the 100-acre wood, and you get to go hang out with Pooh and take care of
Oh, well,
like, some...
you know what?
And
that has nothing to do with The Fox and the
year.
Hound.
Hanging out with Pooh.
How about the Aristocats level?
No. Doesn't exist.
Not yet.
Wow. Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
Although,
none of the live action stuff.
None
of
the live action?
Oh, wait, no, I'm lying. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean is so weird looking, though, because it's live action made animated.
Yeah.
And they're doing it again in three.
And it still doesn't fit.
It doesn't look...
Wait, they do Pirates of the Caribbean again and still no Aristocats?
Yeah.
What about Lady and the Tramp?
No. There's 101 Dalmatians does exist in the first game, but you're just collecting all the puppies. And honestly, the biggest downfall of me personally for the second game is you aren't collecting any puppies.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Wow. Oscar? Oscar?
The Rescuers?
No.
Oscar? You mean Oliver and Company? Oliver and
I
Company.
Feel like you...
I thought it was Oscar and Company. Oscar's the Rabbit.
No, because it's based on Oliver Twist.
No.
I feel like you could just got that.
Really?
It's been like 20-something years. Jesus. I just got that.
The Great Mouse Detective.
No.
I feel like you could...
The Black Cauldron.
I feel like you could do
the
these.
The Black Cauldron literally is a RPG.
I feel like you could do Lady and the Tramp and a few other ones. Like, because there's when you go to the Lion King level, you turn to a lion.
Oh, that's
there's,
awesome.
There's nothing that says you can't like turn into like a dog and
so
like
what's
chill
the
out.
Fun of this game?
Well, you
game.
Turn into a shark.
Up?
No,
baby shark.
No.
Frank.
No, I need to focus on something. Other
in
than
every that. World, your character sometimes takes a different appearance. So we're saying, you know, the main character sort of turns into a lion. So he also, when you're in underwater, in
becomes a mermaid.
Little Mermaid. Little Mermaid, yes, but I'm trying to think of the world name, but I'm tired.
Atlanta.
Is it Atlanta? The lost underwater kingdom of Atlanta?
I thought, wait, no, it's Atlantica.
Atlantica,
yeah. Okay, everyone was wrong. We figured it out.
Good. We got
But you know, Goofy turns into a turtle.
Yeah.
But he's a dog.
And he has why not a dogfish?
Also, Donald's a duck, but like, can he already swim? But he turns into an octopus?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he can't hold his breath long enough.
I guess
enough,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, except that's where...
The lion octopus.
You'd have to explain why the duck isn't drowning.
No.
See, part of the thing is like, because there's 11 games, and, like, one of the games by itself would probably take, like, 20 minutes to explain, you'd need to have, like a multiple-episode series just explaining the history of these games.
I don't know if we're gonna do that.
I don't think so.
But also, I think, like, you are doing it. You're just, like... Trust me, I don't need to know everything about... This is an RPG, because I really don't care about your character. What I want to know is just the broad beats of the thing. So you get to play these characters, and you get to like run into like Disney characters in hilarious situations you wouldn't expect.
You just sort of play through their films as Final Fantasy-esque characters, helping them out through their adventures. It's like, oh, hey, let's go beat up Ursula like and help you through that movie that you saw that one time when you were a child. Now you can live it. You can be a part of it. And like that's basically what the appeal of the game comes down to. It's like, hey, did you want to hang out with Jack Sparrow and do cool pirate stuff?
Do you want to help Cinderella get to her ball?
There you go.
Tron was live action.
Yeah, Birth by Sleep.
Oh, okay. I never played those ones. It's too much.
But it
plays off the same nostalgia aspect that we were talking about before. So, well, not the same essence, but similar.
Yeah, I guess so. No. If you're like, oh, just the idea of seeing these characters in a game you're playing could be fun.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of like going to a park and finding hidden Mickeys. Like, there's a little bit of, oh, I saw it, it's right there. Hey, it's a thing.
I mean, to be fair, I remember being in high school and reading about this game when it was first announced, and I'm like, that's going to be terrible. And then, I don't know how I got caught up in the hype, and it was just, like, so enthralling playing these games.
I picture high school Pope with, like, hair over one eye going, it's going to be terrible.
What's
I'm going to go smoke clothes in the parking lot.
I was not emo in high school.
It's really weird. It's like, there was so much hype around this game. Like, and generated so much. There were these huge long trailers to, like, you know, like epic music. They were like
to specifically this version.
Just the first one, way back back in high school, like Pope. And for whatever reason, like you would think that a lot of people would be like, oh God, Disney or whatever. Like we're older than that. Like, but for whatever reason, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just the right time, or nostalgia was just about to hit.
It had been so long since there was a good Final Fantasy game.
Or a good Kingdom Hearts
game. That
was
when Final Fantasy X came out, which is arguably the best or worst, depending on who you ask.
Yeah, it's weird. That was a very polarizing game, but it hit at just the right moment where everyone kind of got on board with it, and everyone loved it. And it just became this huge other arm on Square Enix's, like giant like lumbering tree that like it's like almost as big as Final Fantasy.
Here's a big question. Has anything from Kingdom Hearts game, to your knowledge, ever leaked back into Disney?
They just had Sora in a park like a month ago.
And Sora is a character.
Sora is the main character of the whole series. Yeah. So
but that was Hong Kong Disney, and nobody that doesn't count.
Hong Kong Disney is apparently
like Disney World.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry. You didn't specify
Park. Well, Pope is there like every 3 months. So.
Yeah. They have taken some inspiration though. Like it's not completely one-sided like the Marvel shows into the Marvel universe.
Mary Poppins.
How many Kingdom Hearts characters appeared in Wreck-It Ralph?
Oh, good question.
Because if the answer is anything less than one, then that's an utter failure.
I really wish that they had shown up, actually.
That would have been really interesting.
Wreck-It Ralph is going to be in the new Kingdom Hearts 3, though, along with Toy Story and a few other ones.
Jeez. Everyone's hyped for Toy Story.
It's like Marvel. Yeah. It's like the MCU.
It is.
Yeah.
Sorry, your pissant little video game characters don't get to be in Wreck-It Ralph.
To be fair, it is its own huge universe unto itself, though.
It's crazy.
Unlike any of the other video game characters.
In Hong Kong all the time, though, or something like that. Because they love having stuff like that in Japan, Disney.
Zangief was in freaking Wreck-It Ralph.
Both of them.
Yeah. Both Zangiefs were in Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, that tracks.
The red trunks and the blue trunks.
There you go, exactly.
Mulan?
Mulan was in the second game.
All right, good. I was trying to think of things that would... How about Treasure of Atlantis or the Hunt for Atlantis?
No, that was Treasure Planet.
Atlantis.
Yeah.
They're the same movie, right?
They're practically the same movie.
Wait, Tron was live action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, Tron did show up, right?
So yeah, Tron was in the second game.
There could be other ones, like
Mary Poppins.
The Apple Dumpling Gang?
Apple Dumpling Gang. Mm-hmm. Woo!
We'll see you in the third game.
Pete's Dragon?
That would be freaking amazing. You know what? Figment. Figment from the Epcot ride.
Does anybody else remember the very short-lived Disney franchise of Disney Dragons?
Vaguely.
It's like they tried to create a quote-unquote boys version of the fairies series, and they had these really bitchin' redesigns of like every dragon that has ever appeared in a Disney movie, including Elliot, Maleficent's dragon form, Figment,
Mushu,
and
probably.
Mushu,
yeah,
from Mulan. Really cool stuff. Those would have worked great in a video game.
So, what do you call it? The director of the series decided to troll everybody like crazy because there's this one character who was voiced by Leonard Nimoy, R.I.P. But
Unicron.
Yeah.
Oh no! Wait, that was
Galvatron.
But the character who acts like directly opposite that character, he had voiced by Mark Hamill because he wanted to have a Star Wars Star Trek thing going on.
Jesus. Oh, the thing is, you could get away with in a video game because I guess people still haven't quite realized that it is a huge industry.
Yeah,
let's just do this. All right, cool. So how awesome is this new game? Tell me about it.
It's not out yet.
Yeah, as of the podcast, it comes out tomorrow.
Are you guys kidding me? We just spent we spent 3 hours talking about a game that isn't even out yet?
We know what worlds are going to be in it.
Oh, what worlds are going
to
be in it?
Well, they're repeating multiple, which is frustrating to me personally. They're doing Pirates again. They're doing 100 Acre Woods again.
Lion King again?
No, they're not doing Lion King again. They're doing
Atlantica. Well, there's at least Ariel in the game, I know.
Like, yeah, I don't think they're actually doing the world.
She's going to be in the Aladdin level.
No, there's no Aladdin level.
No, it was just a sing-along level.
But they are doing
game.
They're doing some of the newer movies, like they're doing Wreck-It Ralph's world. They're doing Arendelle, so from Frozen.
Oh, neat.
The world from Tangled. I can't think of the name, so I really hope the chameleon's in there and he's like hangs out with you or something. I don't know.
That'd be cool.
What's his name? The chameleon from.
Oh, I don't know.
Some of the J, right?
Like, yeah. When he would be a cool summon.
Was it Gaspar or something like that?
Yeah. That's similar. I can't think of it, but it's close to that.
Taylor always knows.
The chicken from Mulan would be good, too.
Has there ever been a tabletop role-playing adaptation of Kingdom Hearts?
I'm sure there has.
Yeah, it has to exist.
Because I would run this game.
There is a tabletop of everything. It's like that rule on the internet that I don't know
it's
if
like
we're
rule
left.
34
yeah.
RPGs. Like
yeah.
It's a sexy role-playing game.
If it exists, there is an RPG of it.
Yep.
What would be the rule? No, we're not going to talk about that.
No. Nope.
So anyways, yeah, all right. I'm excited about you guys playing this game and eventually coming back with an actual review. Will you do that for us?
I got to beat the second one first. I'll get back to you.
I'll give you one.
So it's 1, 2, and 3, and then there's a bunch of other ones that
I'm
don't matter.
I'm not playing this.
Yeah, we're not.
I'm going to watch the YouTube recaps of that. I can't.
There you go. And if you like YouTube recaps, why don't you subscribe to our podcast that you're listening to right now? That's right. Subscribe, like, and follow us on the social medias. That's right. Social media. It's how you get your anger on. Thank you all for joining me on this wonderful episode, joining us on this wonderful episode. We will probably be back with an actual Kingdom Hearts review eventually, and maybe even a Oscars recap, because damn it, I'm excited for this to happen.
But we do have a month.
No.
Good night, everybody!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.